This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
I only went out for a walk and finally concluded to stay out till sundown. For going out, I found, was really going in.
This week on Sea Change Radio, we talk about journeys, large and small. First, we hear from Marilyn and Hal Weiner, the filmmakers behind the PBS series Journey to Planet Earth. The documentary series is hosted and narrated by Matt Damon and explores the voyage that human beings and the planet are taking together. The latest episode illustrates the connection between the severe weather that climate change is already bringing and security threats around the world. Then we hear from author Tom Courtney, who discusses the walkabout movement, traveling by foot from inn to inn. Courtney talks about his books, which are essentially how-to guides for a soul-enriching way to explore and commune with nature. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by filmmakers Hal and Marilyn Weiner. They're creators and producers of the PBS series Journey to Planet Earth, and the latest episode, which is debuting on PBS December 15th around the country, is called Extreme Realities. Marilyn, Hal, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
So when most of us think of climate change, we think of the disruption it'll cause to flora and fauna and to humans. But your film looks at it through a national security lens. Why don't you outline the basic thesis of the film for us?
Extreme Realities is it's a new episode in the Journey to Planet Earth series, and it focuses on the link between severe weather events, climate change, and threats to our national security. It's a subject that we have been fascinated with for many years, that goes back to 2001.
Were you looking at this through a national security lens? Because Americans tend to react very quickly to terrorism, like in 9/11, like all of a sudden we're starting a new war. But we've heard these dire pleas from, you know, there's annual reports from IPCC and all these other climate scientists who are saying this is a dire need and we need to act now, but we drag our feet. Was that one of the reasons why you guys decided to kind of take that angle, is because maybe if Americans can view it through a national security lens, they'll actually act?
That's a good point. And all of this, we've done 13 shows in this series. So unfortunately, we're often preaching to the choir. You know, it's to people who believe in the issue. And it's, yes, there's obviously things they're going to learn. But one of the reasons for doing this show was to go beyond our usual PBS audiences, or to broaden the PBS audiences, and to make sure that we were reaching across both sides of the aisle. And we wanted it to be bipartisan, and we have experts like Jim Woolsey, who the ex-CIA director in the show, and others who are not necessarily to the left. So we definitely thought that this was a way to reach a bigger audience than usual. And that, yeah, I mean, and as you said, it is, we feel it is, the issue is dire. It is important. We do need to act, and we have to figure out ways to get people to get off their butts and act.
Maybe you can walk us through some of the examples that you use in the film of national security and climate change overlapping.
Extreme Realities features about five or six case studies that are pretty good examples of that link between climate change and severe weather and national security issues. Probably the one of the most vivid examples is happened in 2010, when the polar vortex created an anomaly in Pakistan and in Russia. In Pakistan, there was an unprecedented flood that displaced 20 million people. What happened when that happened, there was a incredible fight between the Taliban and the United States forces to win the hearts and minds of those that were displaced by this event. The Taliban was in there first. They provided food, they provided shelter, and they provided other resources. The United States was not exactly slow to respond, but they weren't on location at the time. So what happened was that when there is an event like this, you see people vying to capture the hearts and minds of those that are affected. In Pakistan, in many ways, the Taliban won. Also, the Taliban told the people, do not accept anything from the American forces or there will be repercussions. But in Pakistan, there was a big fight over who the people will look to for support when they desperately needed food and health resources and other things. What's unique about that event in 2010 is that the same polar vortex anomaly created an extreme drought in Russia. There were thousands and thousands of wildfires all over Russia that required tens of thousands of people responding. What happened in Moscow was that there was a severe heat wave coupled with toxic fumes from the forest fires that were all over Russia. Ultimately, 56,000 people died in Moscow because of the toxic air, because of the heat wave, and because of the wildfires. What happened outside of Moscow was even, in many ways, as bad. There was a severe drought, and the corn harvest dropped by 40% because of the drought. Putin immediately put a ban on exporting of corn and wheat from Russia, who was a major exporter. This resulted in a spike of food prices and was closely linked to the Arab Spring, because what started the Arab Spring was a cry for food prices and bread prices to come down.
And these anomalies will become less and less of an anomaly is kind of the basic idea. These are going to be more commonplace. Is that fair to say?
As we say in the show, it's the new normal. The other example we did was Afghanistan. There was a huge drought. Poppy uses only 1/6 of the water that wheat and corn uses. So all of a sudden, the farmers turned to poppy. Which obviously ends up as heroin around the world. And if the farmers grew poppy, which they were able to then give to the Taliban in turn would offer the farmers protection and also asking that maybe their children would join the cause, join the Taliban cause. It's a very complicated
story. It was complicated, and it was also a reversal from the Taliban's earlier position, which was anti-poppy, right? But they saw an opportunity, and they realized that poppy was easier to grow and that they could become a bulwark against the United States' anti-poppy policy and win over hearts and minds, like you were talking about.
Absolutely. There was a time then when the Taliban was the ruling political power in Afghanistan, and they immediately said that growing poppy was anti-Islamic. But as soon as they were thrown out of power and they needed funds, their decisions obviously changed.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to filmmakers Hal and Marilyn Wiener. Their latest film is Extreme Realities. It's part of their Journey to Planet Earth series on PBS. We hear about the changing Arctic and how the shipping lanes and other oil resources are going to be the next frontier for battling resources.
Yeah, in the show we say it's the next gold rush, only they're not rushing towards gold, they're rushing towards oil.
Maybe you can paint a picture of how these battle lines are being drawn. There's more actors than just Russia and the U.S.
The first place in the world to really show the severe effects of climate change is the Arctic. It's the Arctic, as we all know, is melting at unprecedented rates, and we see that in the change to the polar vortex, which brings severe weather to the United States and southern nations in the southern states here. It's a very complex scientific story that we try to and do clarify in the film.
After creating this film, what kind of takeaways did you have that made you feel hopeful for the future, despite all of these ominous signs in terms of climate change and the national security overlap?
From a positive viewpoint, things are being done around the world. Scientists are coming up with new ways to adapt to climate change. It requires a lot of money, but there are ways to generate power using alternative energy sources. It is now a fact that producing electricity from solar and wind is as cheap as producing power from coal-fired power plants. That's a remarkable change. The unfortunate problem we're facing today, particularly in the United States, is that climate change has become a wedge issue. And we make a very strong point that in order to really face this crisis, people have to go out there and vote for people that understand the problem and are willing to confront the problem and are willing to solve the problem, and not allow people who are in power in Congress to be climate deniers, because those that are climate deniers are not doing it because they do not believe the science. They're doing it because they're getting money from either the oil companies or from the Koch brothers.
Extreme Realities debuts on PBS December 15th. Hal and Marilyn Wiener, thanks for being my guests on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Alex.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
Next, I'm joined by author Tom Courtney. Tom, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Great to be here, Alex. Thank you.
You've written a couple books about walking, Walkabout Malibu to Mexico and Walkabout Northern California. What is the Walkabout movement and how does it differ from either walking or hiking?
Well, these are hiking guides, but the way they differ is that this is about hiking from inn to inn. So hiking the wilds of California, but stopping each night at a bed and breakfast or an inn or a hostel for a comfortable bed, a good meal, glass of wine.
So it's different than backpacking.
Yeah.
And it's more of a tour as opposed to just going for a day hike.
That's right. So it's like usually 3 to 5 day hikes, a lot along the coastline of California, but then also in the Sierra and the Southern Cascade.
And what kind of mileage would an average person in average shape try to cover in terms of a three to five day walkabout?
Yeah, it really varies. So some of them are just really genteel and they're 5 mile hikes. There's some multi-day hikes that it just average like 7 miles a day, but then there's some really much more challenging ones, especially when you get in the mountains up on the Lost Coast of Northern California. There's a 20-mile day, but mostly it's in the 5 to 12 mile range.
So when was your first walkabout, and when did you realize you were doing this as opposed to just hiking?
Yeah, you know, I've always loved hiking. Loved hiking in the Sierra and along the coast. And it was a while ago, I mean, over a decade ago, that I took my first hike from end to end. And that was in England. That was in the Cotswolds. And this is something that's really popular in Europe and in other parts of the world, New Zealand, South Africa. And Americans flock to Europe to do their hiking from end to end. And that was just a great experience, hiking through the Cotswolds, you know, stopping each night in a village and going down to the local pub and meeting the local people and walking through this beautiful countryside. But what got me started in this country was I was hiking out in the Marin Headlands. So you know, that's the area that's, you know, if you're driving out of San Francisco and you're crossing the Golden Gate Bridge, just to the left, there's all that open space. You take the first exit, and 10 minutes later, you are at the beach, at Rodeo Beach. And this is part of the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. So I was out hiking on the coastal hills, and I walked up to Wolf Ridge, and I looked north. And I couldn't see any buildings, but I could look 35 miles up that coast and just see green space. All the way to Point Reyes. And I wondered, could I actually hike all the way to Point Reyes, National Seashore? And then I wondered, could I stay in inns along the way? So went home, pulled out the maps, started making some reservations, and that was the start. That was just a magnificent 3-day hike, fun coastal villages, rugged coastline, hiking up the flank of Mount Tamalpais, hiking through redwoods. And before that hike was over, I was starting to think, where else could I do this in California? So the movement of hiking from inn to inn in the United States is new. There have been places where this has been happening, the High Sierra camps in Yosemite. There's a magnificent hike along the Rogue River, where you can hike multi-days, stopping at inns along the way. But this has really exploded in California. My first book, Walkabout Northern California, Hiking Inn to Inn, came out in 2011. And the response was just remarkable. You know, a lot of people who had been to Europe and hiked in the Alps or in the British Isles, or northern Spain, or in Cinque Terre, now realize they could be doing something like that right here in California. And then that led to the book that just came out a couple months ago, Walkabout Malibu to Mexico, Hiking Inn to Inn on the Southern California Coast. And so that was an interesting experience for me. My wife Heidi and I hiked along the Malibu coast. So we started from north of L.A. and took a 3-day walk down to Santa Monica. And we experienced what I expected, beautiful, expansive swimming beaches and nice coastal villages, you know, fun, good food. But what I really hadn't planned on is that there were sections that were really wild and rocky and just an amazing amount of wildlife, just migrating whales and pods of dolphins and sea lions and harbor seals. And also, you know, you are hiking through this area that is adjacent to a really intensely urban part of the country, but you're cut off mostly by bluffs. So just the dominant force is the wild and untamed Pacific.
Myself, I hope you'll understand. I just want to be your loving man. I love you, yes, I love you, all my heart and soul. Would mistreat you for my way.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to author Tom Courtney about the walkabout movement.
We've covered a lot of stories on Sea Change Radio where we talk about ways to get around. And now with smartphones and all these different ways to connect to transportation, you could do ride sharing, car sharing, public transportation options are bountiful in bigger cities like the Bay Area. How does walkabout incorporate that? And why don't you give us some of the ground rules that you kind of set forth in these books?
The challenge and what was really fun is to think about where could we be walking in the wilderness of California, where there would be inns or hostels or hotels or B&Bs just one day's hike apart. So this is a real low-carbon alternative. This is a chance to leave the car behind and put on a 12 to 15-pound day pack and take a multi-day, multi-destination vacation.
So when you say that 12 to 15 pounds, that's just basically like some toiletries and clothes and maybe that's a change of shoes.
And water. And then some other things. You know, in the book, there's in both the books, there are lists of the kind of essentials you might want to take and then also other things you might want to take along.
But you're not cooking up your own stews and things like that.
Not at all, man.
You're styling on this.
This is it. We're eating well. We're doing a lot of, you know, nice seafood along the way.
Uh-huh.
What I find, at least with myself, that first day out, I'm kind of churning the to-do list, thinking about what happened last week, what I need to do when I get back. But by the second day, I'm just much more tuned in to the sights and the sounds and the smells of nature. So, you know, I think this is something that backpackers know and multi-day hikers know. John Muir said that, nice quote that I like, he said, "I only went out for a walk and finally concluded to stay out till sundown. For going out, I found, was really going in." I think this is something that more and more people find that they get this kind of connection with nature, and it gets magnified as you're going on from day to day and doing a multi-day hike. It feels to me like these are just such challenging times. People are working super hard. They're not getting enough sleep. But also just it's very challenging times for activists, social activists, environmental activists, and this is a chance to really sort of nourish our spirit and get grounded again to be able to go back and do the good work.
And there's something to that pace of hiking where the natural beauty sinks in at a different pace than even on a bike.
Yeah, that's right. So this is sensing nature, connected with nature at 2 miles an hour.
So what kind of budget should somebody expect on a daily basis if they're going to abide by the Tom Courtney walkabout book?
You know, you can really pretty much choose your budget. Staying at inns along the coast and in California in general is not always inexpensive. You're going to find, certainly you can be spending much more than $200 a night. You're more likely to be able to find nice inns at the $100 to $150 range, oftentimes less than $100. But one really nice alternative is that there's a lot of hostels along the way. So I'm on the board of Hosteling International USA, and that organization has 56 hostels around the country, a network of hostels, and a lot of them are on the California coast. So we could walk out of your studio here in San Francisco and hike across the Golden Gate Bridge and be at the Marin Headlands Hostel. Great place to spend the night. The Headlands is magical at night. You know, the deer and the turkey come out. It's so peaceful. The next day, you can hike up to Muir Beach and stay at the Green Gulch Zen Farm. So this is a wonderful place that welcomes visitors, that's owned by the San Francisco Zen Center. Beautiful gardens, beautiful fields. You're welcome to come join the students in meditation. You're also provided 3 hearty vegetarian meals. And then that's about a 7-mile hike, then another 7-mile hike to Stinson Beach, where there are some nice modest accommodations, including the Stinson Beach Motel. And then a longer hike the next day, about 10.4 miles up to Bolinas. You know, is 10.4 miles a long hike? If I said, let's get up and hike 10.5 miles, we'd get back here in about 4 hours and I'd probably be bushed. But in California, in summer, we've got 15 hours of daylight. Right now, even, when people now are taking holiday hikes on the Southern California coast, there's 10 hours of daylight. We could get up, have a leisurely breakfast, set out at a modest pace. In the summer, we could take a swim in the ocean or in that Sierra Lake, sit in the shade of a buckeye and read a book. We're still going to arrive at our inn in time for happy hour. We could end that hike up to Point Reyes at the Point Reyes Hostel. So in the hostels, you know, you're staying there, it's costing maybe $30 a night, or if you're getting a family room, it's going to cost more than that, but it's really inexpensive accommodations. And these hostels, the Hostel International USA hostels, are all along the West Coast and mostly in just extraordinary places.
His books are Walk About Northern California and Walk About Malibu to Mexico, author Tom Courtney. Tom, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
It's been fun. Thank you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Gonzalez, Mr. Sadhead, and Freddie King. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.